We're going to begin our day by reading from the Bible, from Matthew chapter 25 and verse 14. Again, it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted his wealth to them. To one he gave 5 bags of gold, to another 2 bags, and to another 1 bag, each according to his ability. Then he went on his journey. The man who had received 5 bags of gold went at once and put his money to work and gained 5 bags more. So also the one with 2 bags of gold gained 2 more. But the man who had received 1 bag went off, dug a hole in the ground, and hid his master's money. After a long time, the master of those servants returned and settled accounts with them. The man who received 5 bags of gold brought the other 5. "Master," he said, "you entrusted me with 5 bags of gold. See, I've gained 5 more." His master replied, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness." The man with 2 bags of gold also came. "Master," he said, "you entrusted me with 2 bags of gold. See, I've gained 2 more." His master replied, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness." Then the man who'd received 1 bag of gold came. "Master," he said, "I knew that you're a hard man, harvesting where you've not sown, gathering where you've not scattered seed. So I was afraid, went out and hid your gold in the ground. See, here is what belongs to you." His master replied, "You wicked, lazy servant. So you knew that I harvest where I have not sown and gather where I have not scattered seed? Well then, you should have put my money on deposit with the bankers so that when I returned, I would have received it back with interest. So take the bag of gold from him and give it to the one who has 10 bags. For whoever has will be given more, and they will have an abundance. Whoever does not have, even what they have will be taken from them. Throw that worthless servant outside into the darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." Names like Nick Hewer, Margaret Mountford, Karen Brady, Alan Sugar. 17 series, 226 episodes. The most famous line, "You're fired." The Apprentice, one newspaper called it the thinking man's reality show. The paper was The Sun, so you have to take that with a bit of salt. But 9 million people tune in to watch, in a sense, this happening. Here's a rich man, and he just wants to see. He doesn't need the money. We're going to see that in a moment. He doesn't need the money that they've earned. But he's just sort of like, "I've got a big plan, and I just want to see what part you'll have in it." It feels an Alan Sugar-ish moment. Of course, it's not. Thankfully, the most famous words from this passage are not "you're fired." They are "well done, good and faithful servant." They're the famous words from this. But of course, Jesus is not talking a reality show. He is talking eternally significant, isn't he? And that's how it ends. That's why it ends like that, so that you get sucked into a kind of... It looks like it's another round of The Apprentice. Go out and, you know, flog things on the Bethnal Green Market or wherever. You know, go and make some... But then you get, no. This is something of eternal significance. For it ends on that very, very, very challenging statement, outer darkness. Outer darkness. So Jesus, in one sense, is waking people up, isn't he? That we've got one life to live, and he wants us to live it well, and particularly with an eye on eternity. And as we begin this little Pebble conference, tomorrow Richard will be sharing more of the vision of what we want to try and achieve through helping one another grow, to be productive and godly in our service of the Lord Jesus. But I just want to set the scene today, which is asking us 2 questions, I think, which this passage asks us, and then a challenge. The question is, who are you serving? Because who you serve has eternal consequences. Who you serve has eternal consequences. You'll see that 2 of the servants, clearly, they love their master to bits. They not only go and use what he entrusts to them and achieve something with it, but when he comes, you just sense that lovely tone in their voice, and it's very deliberate in the text, isn't it? "Master, This is not coming before the headmaster at school when you've been a naughty boy and you're about to get told off, let alone before a judge and you're about to be put in prison. This is before the master, who's back at last. You know the sense there. Come and share the joy as he invites them to a much bigger thing than they've been involved in. You've been faithful with a few things. I've been in charge of many things. Here's a generous master, and they're glad he's there. They're serving him. Of course, the contrast is with the other man. I mean, this is the verbal equivalent, isn't it, of a rude gesture. As he speaks to the master, "Master, I know you're a hard man. I mean, you're severe, you're demanding, you're a bully, I don't like you, and I have not done anything with that, and here it is." There's a very... I mean, you imagine that happening on The Apprentice. I mean, you wouldn't have even got in the building. You'd have been kicked out. You would never even hear the word "you're fired." You know, they would have taken you out and thrown you out. These incredibly rude on a human level. But of course, there is in the text that sort of slight echo, isn't there? I heard your voice. I was afraid, and I hid. You've seen that somewhere before, haven't you? It's deliberate, isn't it? The way the Lord Jesus constructs it. We ought to hear an echo. Oh, well, this has happened before. I heard your voice. I hid. And again, I hid your gold in the ground, in the earth. And you go, oh, yeah, that's what human beings have been doing for a very long time. There's an antagonism towards the master that the Lord Jesus brings out at the end, because it's not just a human story, is it? It's are you serving the Lord or are you serving yourself? Now, Pat Lencioni, some of you may know that name, is a brilliant Christian author in America. He's written loads of really good books. He kind of writes for the marketplace, but he's smuggling in Christian values all the time in all his books. He did one of the most powerful leadership talks I've ever heard. If you want to check it out, Global Leadership Summit 2019, I think it's called "What's Your Motive?" And he started the talk like this. He said, "I do not like the term servant leader. Because it implies there is another kind of authentic leadership and there is not." He said, "The other kind of leadership is what he calls reward leadership. So you are doing something, but really you're getting something out of it. Now in the marketplace, that might be a fat salary." I've got a friend who he works in the marketplace. He's trying to get a knighthood, I think. I think that's what he's already got sort of OBE, but he's kind of got an eye on something. You know, he's looking for some kind of recognition. Others, it's just, I just want affluence. I'm working my way up so I can retire at 50, you know, house in the car. There's all kinds of reasons why people work, but basically they're using for their own ends. But then Lencioni went on to say, Christians can do exactly the same. Now look, there's no money in our job, okay? So if you think that isn't where we're going to get, we're not going to get an OBE, we're not going to get anything like that. But there's a sort of, like, I get that buzz. I get the buzz. And you know, I didn't think it was about you. I thought it was about him. And Lencioni goes on and describes some of the habits of a reward leader. And he particularly puts his finger on working with others. And this is what he said. He said, reward leaders, basically in it for themselves, they avoid difficult conversations. They resent having to repeat vision and message statements. They don't like team building. They don't run great small team meetings either. They're in meetings and they just can't wait to get out of them. You know, you're almost like, oh, come on, you know, I've got much more important things to do, more important books to read, more important sermons to write, more important, you lot are just wasting my time. That's the kind of mindset they have towards team meetings. And that is a peculiar danger of our job. If you're a pastor of a church, if you're in a leadership, especially if you're a senior leader, all these meetings, just wasting my time. I want to get on with the real job. And then she only says, who are you serving when you think like that? And when I heard that, oh my goodness. And then another one of his books called The Ideal Team Player, brilliant book. he talks about three qualities. He talks about hungry, humble, smart. Hungry, work hard. Humble, not about my ego. Smart, emotionally intelligent. Understanding myself, managing myself appropriately. Understanding others, managing them appropriately. And he looks at what happens if you have one of those qualities, and especially if you've got two out of the three. So if you're smart and humble, but not hungry, you're not hardworking, you're a lovable slacker. Everybody loves you, but you don't ever achieve much. And what if you're humble, you're not about my ego, and I'm hungry, I'm hardworking, but I'm not very smart. Accidental diminisher. I leave people feeling used. Common problem in ministry. But he said the most dangerous one is when you're hungry, hardworking, and smart, you're emotionally intelligent. He said, because you can fake being humble for a very long time. You can fake it. But in the end, it'll come back and you're shown to be who you are. Which happens here, isn't it? In the end, who has that guy been working for? Well, not for his master. In the end, it comes out. And that's what Jesus is intending us to have a hard think here. Who am I serving? Because who I serve has an eternal consequence. We really want to be serving the master. But the second question is this one. Do you realize that how you work is eternally significant? How you work is eternally significant. Now, the master doesn't need the money. Okay, work that one out. What's he given them? He's given them about 160, he's shared out 160 years worth of wages between them. One guy's got 100 years worth of wages, another's got 160 years worth of wages. And at the end of the story, he says, okay, I entrusted you with a little, now have a lot. And you think, excuse me? These guys are investing a lot of dosh, aren't they? But it's only small change to the master. He's not doing it because he needs it. He's like a Scrooge trying to screw it out of them. He's been seeing which one he can trust and who is going to be part of his big plan. This is not a money-making scam, is it? This is the master is not like, come on, I want more, more, more. He's already got so much that he's seen who he can trust. Because they have worked productively. They've worked effectively. Immediately, the one who went out. And he just doubled his money. The man who received 5 bags of gold went out at once. I've been gifted this. I'm going to use it for my master. I love him to bits. I just can't wait to see his smile. He doesn't need the money. I know, he's so loaded. Now, for you and I don't know what background you come from, but we were in the Caribbean a few years ago, and we went past this little row of super yachts, okay? Hundreds of millions per yacht. And there were dozens and dozens of them. And you're thinking, okay, I've never seen so much concentrated wealth in all my life. It's just, and that's just the yacht that I use twice a year. You can afford 100 million or more of yacht, you know, helicopter pad, and there's 10 or 15 guys looking after the yacht the whole year just so you use it. Like, that's, you know, that's the kind of wealth I've never, ever, that's how he is. He's loaded. But they have worked hard for him because he's a great master to work for. It's the kind of scenario, isn't it? They've worked hard and they've taken what's been entrusted, what's been gifted to them, and used it for the master. Whereas, of course, the other's done nothing. He's done nothing. He's just buried it in the ground. It's almost like, who cares less? At least it wasn't stolen, I suppose. That's his mindset. How you work has eternal consequences, because the master delights to bless. Although he doesn't need what you do for him, he loves to see it and he loves to rejoice. He notices every act of faithfulness, doesn't he? He notices. He loves to see you pray for, get alongside, listen to, counsel, teach, preach. All your activity as a Christian The master sees it. He loves to bless what he can bless. He's not looking to find fault. He's looking to find something he can thank and praise. And look at that. That was great. I loved it. Well done, good and faithful servant. If we've lived for him effectively, we'll hear those lovely words. Well done, good and faithful servant. That's the kind of tone. Of course, the challenge is if we're not living for him and if we're not productive for him, could it be that here, this is what belongs to you, have it back mindset? Is that, none of us are like that. No, living a godly life, we're living a fruitful life, an effective life. And final challenge, simply this. So whatever gifts God's given you, use them well. You know, in other language, you went into the epistles, you'd say, fan into flame the gift that God, you know, gave you on the laying on of hands. Fan into flame. Do your best to present yourself as a workman approved. Paul talks about all that energy inside of me, working hard. Not I, but Christ in me. But there's a sort of energy, and I want to win as many as I can. There was a sort of, who's Paul working for? He's not working for his own name. He's not working even for his own church. He's working for the master, but he wants to be in that situation. And he says to the Philippians, doesn't he? You are my joy, my crown. I've got a daughter getting married in just over a week's time. And I've walked one of, like, four kids, two boys, two girls. I've walked one down the aisle. And it was a lovely experience. Because normally as a pastor, you get there early and you see people come in like, oh yeah, they're late again. But when you're a dad, you're the last at the church. And you're walking her down the aisle and everybody turns around. They're all smiling. Well, they're not smiling at me. They're smiling at her. But there's something just great. I've never been in a church where everybody smiles at me. Normally I see a few frowns. But here, now Paul says, that's what I want to do with you. I want to walk you down the aisle. I want to present you as a pure virgin bride to him. Because you're my joy, you're my crown. In a sense, what is it that we've doubled up? Well, it's not bags of gold, is it? We've just seen people come to know him and love him and grow to be like him. And we want to say, Lord, you gave me these gifts. Here they are. Now, we're all given different gifts, okay? So this is not like Luke 19 where we're all the same. This is Matthew. We're different. So we can forget the comparison game. We don't have to play that game because we've got different gifts. But we do want to be effective, don't we? Whether you're a 10 out of 10 preacher or a 3 out of 10 preacher, will you be faithful where you are? As a young Christian, I think I was probably only converted about 6 weeks. And in the little Baptist church where I was going, I had a visiting speaker. It's called Martin Lloyd-Jones. Well, who, I didn't know him from, you know, Fred Bloggs, really. But the headmaster of our school said, look, he's a famous preacher. If anybody wants to go and listen. And Lloyd-Jones was told, there was a whole load of students, you know, sixth formers just about to leave school. So he changed his sermon. He preached from Daniel chapter 1. And I remember it's clear as crystal. He said, if God has given you a first-class brain, you ought to get a first-class degree. That means you've got to work hard at university. He didn't want us to be dragged into, if I can put it like this, Christian things at the expense of the gift God had given us. And I remember it being very challenged by that because his mindset was not narrow, it was huge. Look what this man Daniel used his gifts. Look what God did with him. So who knows what God might do with you if you are faithful and productive. But we've not all got first class brains. But whatever brain we've got, whatever communication skills we have, whatever pastoral heart we've got, we want to be effective, productive. So on that last day, we can say, Master, Master, so great to see you. And he says, well, so great to see you too. Well done, good and faithful servant. Now come into this eternal joy that you've been faithful with few things. May it be so. May we be godly and effective for our master's honor and joy.